Welcome to episode 126.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Road Trekking RV Lifestyle Podcast. It doesn't make any difference what type of an RV you have, whether it's a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you because here we talk about being out there. Enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and tech to enhance our RV lifestyle. So, we welcome you and are very honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. And this episode 126 being released on February 8th, 2017. And that's a very special day to me.
It's your birthday.
It's my birthday. Yes. Happy birthday to me. Hey, one of the biggest fears many RVers have is fire. And every year, RV fires cause death and injuries and tens of millions of dollars in damages. This is an episode that you want to listen to because some really important information is going to be conveyed your way from our friend Mark Polk of RV Education 101. Mark is really a true expert. He's an expert on all aspects of RVs and RV safety. And Mark has some really practical, critical advice for us in this episode about keeping our RVs safe from fire. And plus, we have lots of news and tips and RV information, and as always, your questions and your comments about the RVing lifestyle. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer, who also has a birthday this week.
I do, and happy birthday to you, Mike.
Happy birthday to you, Jen. Her birthday's the 12th, mine's the 8th.
It makes it easy for you to remember my birthday.
You know, it's that one time of year I can go into the card store and buy both of them in one fell swoop.
Right.
I get the two cards in one swoop. Your birthday and
Valentine's Day.
And then
Day.
That only leaves me anniversary.
An anniversary you always struggle with.
That's always a hard one to get.
But I try to help you out.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Anyway, we're home in our Sticks and Bricks home in Michigan, where we're still another very warm day. All the snow that we had a week or so ago is pretty much melted. It's raining and wet.
And I wish it were snowing instead of raining. But what are you going to do? Get what you get.
You know, we like snow. People always say, how come you don't stay all winter down in Florida? Because we like snow. We come up and camp in the snow. And we like the seasons.
Yes, and poor Bo, he doesn't like rain either.
He doesn't.
He's a snow guy.
He likes snow. And he doesn't like hot weather, really hot. And that's one of the reasons we picked the Emerald Coast for the condo that we visit a lot down there.
For the
there.
Dog.
It's cooler down there. It's, you know, in the summer, it's really, really hot. But that's when we're out west in the mountains. And so it doesn't bother us. And in the fall and winter, it's cool. And when I say cool, that's relative. For us up in Michigan, 60 and 70 degrees is very nice. We like that kind of weather.
I do.
I think I'd prefer, you know, upper 60s and 70s year round. That's my favorite. That's my sweet spot for temperature.
Right. You're coming around, boy.
I am. It's nice weather. So we hit the road right after the birthdays. I think we hit the road on Valentine's Day.
On Valentine's Day.
How's that for a sweet Valentine?
But the reason we're waiting so long is the dentist.
Oh, yeah. We would have actually left
sooner.
But you had some problems. I had a
filling that broke. You know, those things happen when you're on the road, which is a little scary, a strange dentist. I like my dentist. And anyway, I got back and he said I needed a crown. And so I waited my 2 weeks and then the crown didn't fit. And first time that's ever happened. And I hope that never happens to anybody because that was uncomfortable.
Pretty painful.
Getting
huh?
a new mold and all that fooling around. You never would have done it.
No,
you would have
no.
just said, take
just
out the tooth.
Pull out the tooth. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's it. I mean, I hate even getting my teeth cleaned, as you know.
I know. You don't go. You don't take good care of your teeth. I have nice teeth. I have the issues. I know.
Those
heredity.
Nice
your parents gave you good teeth.
Well,
be grateful.
So anyway, Jen's getting some dental work done, and then actually the afternoon you get it, we're hitting the road.
Yeah, you'll probably be sitting in the parking lot tooting the horn.
Well, I'll just be waiting with Bo. You know, I probably should have shared this with you first, but I'm wondering if we should do kind of a take our time travel. We're heading basically down the Emerald Coast and get some beach time, but maybe we'll do a daily blog as we go down, a little video, a little audio, a little everything that just shows how we find stuff serendipitously on the road.
Sounds good to me.
And that's without a whole lot of planning, how you can, you know, stay off back roads, or if you're even on the interstate, how you can find stuff. Maybe we'll do that. We'll see.
I would like that, because I get sick of always driving as fast as we can.
Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of options. I was just kind of looking at two routes that we could take, three routes, actually. So anyway, we might do that. That would start midweek next week. And I think our podcast next week is, I've been saving, we're going to make a Valentine's podcast next week. We get a lot of email, a lot of questions, and some of them are kind of personal. And I've put those aside, nothing that you should worry about. But I mean, you know, like people wonder how we met. And so I've kind of saved a bunch of that, how we get along and all that stuff.
They can't tell.
I'm not telling. But maybe I'll put those together. We'll kind of make it a Valentine theme. Will you be my Valentine next
sure.
week? Sure. Okay. So maybe we'll do that next week. And we're going to hit the road after Valentine's Day, after Jennifer's birthday's Sunday. Mine is today.
No, tomorrow. Well, it'll be today, but when they hear this.
Mine is, yeah, today, the 8th of February, as this is being released. And then yours is Sunday the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be pretty fun. We're looking forward. We always like birthdays, even though you don't like getting old. There's still something about a birthday that gets you all excited, don't you think?
I do.
Well, anyway, are you ready to get back to work?
I am.
All right.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
We love to boondock. We also like to camp in the wintertime. Both types of RVing can pose challenges to staying clean. When on a long boondocking trip, we try to conserve our water. In the winter, with no water in the freshwater tanks, it's the same thing. We connected with our road trekking friend, Jan Matthews, on a recent winter campout, and she showed us a very handy way to clean and bathe when water is in short supply.
Hi, I'm Jan Matthews, and I've got a tip for those of us who boondock or camp in the winter and our rigs are filled up with antifreeze and you can't bathe. And I happen to be a person who likes to bathe every day. So I pick up a pack of cleansing washcloths that are ordinarily used for bedridden patients in the hospital. You find them in most pharmacies. Walmart, Meijer, CVS, Rite Aid, wherever you have a pharmacy. And you pick up a pack or two of these bathing cleansing washcloths. They're good for they moisturize dry skin. They're rinse-free, pH balanced, warm. It's in your microwave for a more comforting, soothing bath.
This is a great idea for when you can't take a bath and you want to freshen up, something that we can learn from what they do to folks at the hospital. And be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on your computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over and over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email inbox. If I use your tip in the podcast, we'll send you a free road trekking hat. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, R-A-D, powerbikes.com, all one word. Rad Power Bikes, they're an electric bike manufacturer that offers you direct-to-consumer pricing on awesome premium electric bikes. Now, if you've been camping for any time over the last couple of years, you have seen them. E-bikes are becoming quite the rage among RVers because they don't take up a lot of room. They are great transportation. And Rad Power
Power Bikes offers really quality electric bikes. That's the ones that we like to recommend because they will fit a wide variety of your needs and your wants. They have three different models that reach 20 miles per hour with zero pedaling. They give you the choice to ride pedal-free with throttle, or you can use five different levels of pedal assist for an added boost. You can combine them however you want. These e-bikes are perfect for people who want to get back into riding. You don't want to tow a big old car behind you. Maybe you're recovering from surgery or injury and you need just a little bit of help, a little boost, you know, to keep up with friends and family. They even make a cargo bike, so you can use it to run errands and pick up stuff at the store and bring them back on the e-bike. All three models go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge, and they're priced, that's why we love radpowerbikes.com, because they're priced at less than half that of comparable bikes on the market, because that dealer and retail markup phase of pricing is just cut out. You deal directly with Rad Power Bikes. Free shipping right now, and if you mention Road Trekking when you check out, you can take an additional $75 off the price of your e-bike. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. It's Jan in Tucson. Well, we finally received our brand new CS Adventurous XL. And like you, we opted for the headboard and the drop-down rear panel, and a few other goodies as well. Now it's sitting in our RV garage, and I'm beginning to put things in it for the first time. I've checked your podcast, but don't see an actual list of what you decided to take in terms of pans, silverware, and other kitchen essentials. Two things have me stumped in particular. I noticed there's a small drawer under the stove that is too low, only about an inch and a half high, to hold most silverware trays. Most seem to be about an inch and three quarters high. So I'm curious if you use that drawer for silverware, and if so, how do you store it? My second dilemma deals with things like aluminum foil, plastic wrap, and even sandwich bags, which come in boxes that I would normally store vertically in cases of aluminum foil and wax paper and plastic wrap in order to save actual space. But they're too tall to fit into any of my cupboards. So do you lie them down, or how do you store them? In any case, I'd love to see what you've done to help with these two problems, and also have any tips that you may want to share. In fact, it'd be great to see your kitchen inventory.
And we have yet one more issue. We do not have a portable barbecue, but are happy to get one. The question, however, is where do you store it after you've used it? My husband always says it gets greasy. It's hard to clean at the campsite, and he doesn't really know where to put it. So what do you guys do? Or do you even have a portable barbecue that you take in your road trek? Please let me know. All right, thanks.
We had actually two questions from Jan. I kind of edited them together there. I remember when we first got ours, how we were so excited, but where do you put everything?
And when you first get ours, and then we got number two, and then we got number three. And let me tell you, every time you get a different one, you've got to figure it all out. Yeah. But it's a nice problem to have.
Well, most of her question had to do with the kitchen. We'll have you take those in just a second. She talked about the barbecue, and let me just say, we do carry one. We have tried a number of different solutions. We used to take along a little charcoal grill. They are messy. I hate charcoal grills. I do like the taste, but it's not worth it on the road. And after lots of experimentation, including taking along a George Foreman electric grill for several months, we have gone right back to the very first portable propane-powered little two-burner stove that we got from Coleman years ago for tent camping. And we absolutely love it. It cooks great. It has an airtight case that you can put it in. You still have to clean it because you don't want to be sleeping on top of something you're storing in the basement. But we really like that little Coleman grill.
And we had that when we first started camping, the portable propane grill, and it was so hard to clean, and it did smell. And I thought, man, I've got enough of this. This is too much work, and I don't like the smell. And that's when we went to the electric, and like you say, the George Foreman, and now we're right back to that little propane grill.
But we have
and
a system now.
You can
we have a system.
Line it with yep. aluminum. Some people do that to try to keep some of the mess down. I prefer cooking outside to keep the smells outside. I like food grilled, and I. Oh, you'd clean it if I asked you to.
Probably not as well as you.
But anyway, I clean it.
After every use,
I clean it because I don't want it building up, and I don't want to sleep with that right under my head.
Bo likes it. He likes it. He would like that smell, but it goes in a little airtight case, which zips up really nice. And we keep that in the basement of ours. And of all the things we've tried, that's the one we like. And it works on those little propane cylinders that are $1.50 or something you get at Walmart.
Should we go to the second part of the question now?
Yes. Now the hard part. This is the kitchen part. I'm just going to take a little nap here. Go ahead.
All right. So when we got this, our last road trek, my tray that I used to keep my flatware from all going together in one spot to keep some order didn't fit. So I kept bringing things home and none of them worked. And then we were at an RV show and I found the perfect fit. But I have seen that other people who are handy have made dividers to divide their flatware up to keep everything from messing all together and rattling around. And then someone who we know who's very near and dear to our heart, he just lets it all rattle around together, the knives and forks and spoons and
now
whatever
should,
is
we
there.
We should explain that this little, and Jan kind of mentioned that little tray, it's a little drawer right underneath the burners. It's very narrow, and most of the dividers you'd buy, you know, at a kitchen supply place like in Walmart or someplace are, I think, 1¾ inches, and they're too tall. So you need something that's 1½ inches or less, and we did find one, and that was a Campco brand, CAMPCO. I remember that. We bought that at a RV show that General RV, they sell a lot of accessories, and at that RV show, they had a bunch of those, and we bought one, and it fit perfect.
But what I really liked was the handy person. I wish I'd taken a picture of it way back, you know, when I saw it. He had, you know, he was handy with tools, and he cut the wood and made little dividers to divide his things up, and that's a great thing to do.
All right, but you can find one. So you can.
Yeah, you can find one out there, and I just get whatever utensils that I can fit into that little drawer without them catching, because things tend to catch. I put there, and then the next drawer down gets the aluminum foil, and I like to bring Ziploc bags, small, and then quart size.
Now those are big drawers, more than you know. They're 6 inches deep, I would guess. Maybe more than that.
Oh yeah, they're pretty deep.
There's two or three of those underneath each other. They hold a lot of stuff.
Right, and it would be nice to have a divider in there as well. And
you need a handyman.
When we see this, we got to find out how people do it, how they do these different little things.
They have handymen for husbands. Maybe we can rent one for it to come fix ours up for us.
Oh, well, you know, we're doing all right. What I really have envy for is that little net thing that they put on the top above the sink so that when you open up that cupboard, all your dishes don't fall out on you.
When you put it across the inside of the cupboard, so when things
think it keeps me agile, because we open that up, I open
Duck!
It up, and I put one arm up to protect myself from what all's going to fall out on me.
Cans away.
Dishes and whatever I have up there, it falls on me, but it keeps life from being boring. I mean, you don't just wander around half paying attention. So when we're on the road next week, maybe we should show our great sister.
She wants, she'd like a list, I guess. And I mean, what do we carry? You know, you've talked about pots and pans. And so maybe what we'll do, the best thing is we'll do a How We Roll video. We'll be on the road next week, and you can actually walk through and show every item that you have on there. It seems pretty boring to me, but maybe somebody else cares about
it. And it depends on your rig, whether you can put a crock pot in your sink if you got a cord that's long enough, or if you're willing to use an extension cord, which I'm not.
Well, people, we sometimes will cook with we have done it when we drive. the Crock-Pot we have has too short of a cord, so we got to find a longer one that'll fit. But you plug it in. You know, you have your inverter on as you're driving, so you have AC power, and you plug the Crock-Pot in there, and you put it in the sink, and then it cooks while you're driving all day. It's really a great solution, but you got to get one with a long enough cord.
And I think they're making the cord short, they say, for safety, but I think they're just being cheap because you need one longer than a foot.
Yes, you do. And that's the one we happen to have. It does fit, but we're told we shouldn't use an extension cord.
And I have a little electric fry pan because we have the outlet so you can cook outside. So again, the electric fry pan to cook things outside.
But Jennifer mentions that every unit is different, and ours is, as Jan's, the CS Adventure XL. So we'll show you, we'll do that show and tell on a how we roll. We'll do a video next week, get that up on the roadtrekking.com site. But lots of stuff, and you'll find it. As soon as you get out there, Jan, everybody gets their favorite little spots, and then you know where to go. And then you get a new RV and you got to figure it all out again. Oh well. All right, ready for another question?
I am.
All right.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. This is John Deeker in Pullman, Washington. We just signed up for the solar eclipse trip in August down to Eastern Oregon, which is actually not too far from us, and we're really excited to go and meet the group, especially you and Jennifer. So I have one question, and that is it appropriate to bring a dog along? Having not been to this type of gathering, we have a small, about a 30-pound dog, Joey, but I don't know if this would be the best thing for him or not. So if you could give me a quick reading on that, I would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Look forward to meeting you guys for the first time and having a great time.
Well, John's,
talk to you later.
John's talking about the big road trekking, boondocking eclipse gathering that's out in August, right? I think it's August 21st, right under the center path of the total eclipse of the sun. You can find details at roadtrekking.com about that trip. Just search under eclipse. But yes, bring your dog. Now, we're on a working cattle ranch out there, so you don't want your dog to run free. But as long as your dog's good on a leash, many, many people bring dogs. We bring our dog Bo pretty much every place we go. But you do have to keep your dogs on leashes, and dogs, they get used to that real quick. And by all means, and congratulations on having a new RV. All right. One more. Boy, Woe would get pretty mad if we left him home now.
He would be heartbroken. Yeah. And then I got to share my news tip for the week.
What?
Well, this tip that I have about dogs and traveling.
Oh, today. Yeah, about traveling. Yeah, Jennifer's got one coming up in just a minute about our pet tip of the week. You really need to listen to that if you take your dogs in your RV, even this time of year. So be sure and listen to that. All right, one more real quick question. This is from Bill.
Hi, Mike. Jennifer, this is Bill. We have a Road Trek Versatile 190. My wife and I are still mostly weekend warriors, but we hope to hit the long road before too long. I'm a trot bum, so our destinations nearly always include a lake or a river, and our luggage includes 3 or 4 fly rods and a couple of spinning rods. We haven't figured out a safe and convenient way to stash these rods on our road trek. Have you or your listeners seen any sort of solution for this? Also, your new yak is awesome. Native is a great brand. My wife and I also have fishing yaks we bring along on a small trailer behind the road trek. Do you think pulling a trailer loaded with yaks and bicycles across the country is practical? Those Oru yaks are very portable, but they aren't fishing yaks, and they're very pricey. I'd like to know your thoughts on that as well. Thanks, guys. Really enjoy your site. Well,
this is kind of the second week in a row we've had a question about my fishing kayak, which is made by Native. It's called the Slayer. It's 10 feet long. I love it. I can't wait. That's one of the reasons we're going down next week, so I can go down and do some kayak fishing. The big challenge I'm having is just what you mentioned. Where do you keep everything? Now, I have a Road Trek CS Adventurous XL. I can take my fishing poles. I stand them up on end along the back, right behind the two doors that open up. That works in mine because I have a Sprinter, which is like 10 feet tall. It's not going to work in your Road Trek Versatile. There are trailers out there, and I will put a couple of links to, it's called Yak Shack Kayak Trailers. Very cool trailers. And you can take a look at that. I'm looking still for just the absolutely correct carrier for my kayak. I know we're going to carry it vertically along the back. I just got to find one that doesn't weigh 350 pounds. Which is what the last one I checked weighed.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I got to be able to open those doors, but I'm close to getting one. So there you go, Bill. Hope that that helps. And I got to get Jennifer out there kayak fishing with me.
I would think there'd be some kind of container that you'd put your fishing rod
I'm sure he's got one if he's a trout bum.
Because you don't want it banging around.
Yeah, I'm sure you just run it in your tubes, those little travel tubes, and you should be okay. You could put it, center hallway of it.
Yep. Yeah, if you've got it in something that'll protect it when you're walking through.
Good luck, Bill. I hope to run into you out there. There's a lot of people who, I get letters now every day, email from people who want to know more about my kayak fishing. So I guess maybe we'll make that our interview of the week here in a couple of weeks. We've got some stuff already in the can and we'll do some more. All right. Sponsoring our questions each week like this is our pals at Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas. We love these guys. Three different dealerships from three different parts of the country, all bringing you a large inventory of Class B RVs, camper vans, from those three locations. Now, if you are in the market for a Class B RV, you know how high in demand they are and how hard it is to find them. And that's why you will want to check in with these three dealers, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, and WagonTrailRV.com. Three dealers that specialize in Class B camper van RVs from all of the major manufacturers. They sell road treks and pleasure ways, leisure travel vans. They have some Class B pluses and some other small motorhomes. So go to their websites, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, WagonTrailRV.com. Listen up to our pal Dan the Van Man about what's happening this week. Hey, Danny.
Thanks, Mike. Here we want to thank everybody for showing up at the St. Louis RV Show. We had an incredible showing. We made some great deals. We're going to continue those great savings this week till Saturday. So check out our website for some great savings on 2016 models and some great show pricing on some 2017s. You can call us at 1-800-467-3905. Have a great day.
They say every dog has its day. In this part of the podcast, it's time for tips, resources, and travel advice about bringing pets on our RV adventures.
There was a very sad story we came across this week from California. A dog locked in a car died of heat exhaustion on Sunday in Palm Springs. Now, no one would think it's hot out there this time of year. The day this happened, the high only reached 70 degrees. But you get direct sunlight even on cooler days. It can be very warm inside a vehicle. Think of it like a solar oven, basically, in your car. Police say that dog left inside of a car for more than 3 hours in Palm Springs died of heat exhaustion on a 70-degree day. Police say the dog's body temperature reached 104 degrees by the time police came in contact with the owner. The owner was arrested and charged with a misdemeanor. Here's the warning. Experts say there can be as much as 40 to 50 degrees difference between what's outside and inside a closed-up vehicle, especially in places like California, Arizona, Florida, and the South, where you have a lot of sunny days. That in the winter may be chilly, but that sunshine warms up a vehicle very quickly. Now, here's the thing. Many RVers often leave their pets in the RV with the air conditioning on. But the experts don't recommend that. And in many states, it's illegal to do so. No matter whether the RV's AC is on or not, animal safety experts and vets say leaving an animal in any kind of enclosed vehicle with the air conditioning on is not a safe alternative. They say the best solution is to consider leaving your pet at home or with a pet sitter if you're going to be away from the pet for an extended period of time.
As I remember when we were, was it Arizona? And it was winter time. It was not that hot compared to how Arizona gets. And we wanted to visit the Saguaro Museum in the Saguaro National Forest. And we had our dog with us. And we're going to leave the dog with the air conditioning on. And boy, we were told very clearly that is against the law.
Well, that was always my worry, that when you leave the AC on, that something could happen where it went off and you would lose your pet.
Yeah. Yep. So it's, I got to listen to the experts, as you say, Jen. Don't leave it in an enclosed vehicle.
And we're from Michigan, where the sun doesn't shine much.
At all. I haven't seen it in 2 weeks.
I mean, we were home a good 2 weeks and we never saw the sun.
Never.
I mean, the sun comes out for maybe half an hour, and that's counted as a sunny day.
Everybody walks around in a daze like a zombie. What's that in the sky? I don't know. Yeah.
So, you know, people like us, you know, we're used to cloudy days. We're not used to the solar effect. We're not used to the sun. I mean, you think of it, solar cooker. We've got all those solar grills.
But that's a startling wake-up call. 70-degree day, and the dog died of heat exhaustion.
Because I usually think 20 degrees, maybe 30 degrees, but I didn't realize it could be 40 or 50, but I'm not used to being in sunny places.
All right. Well, great tip, Jennifer. Great tip. Thanks much. Mm-hmm. Hey, this part of the podcast brought to you by Dozers Dental Chews, an all-natural and healthy treat that your dog will love. Yeah, you can find out more about it right at roadtrekking.com/dozers. And I spell dozers D-O-Z-E-R-S. Ever since our dog, Bo, saw dozers, he has, that's his favorite treat. It's actually a dental chew, and it's one that you use, it's made so that you can give your dog one a day, and it's so soft, the chewed pieces mold to get in between teeth, and they can effectively clean those teeth out. You still should brush your dog's teeth. Don't ever stop doing that. But these really help. Bo has really nice, clean, white teeth. But he loves these things. This is like his favorite treat. If I just say, hey, Bo, you want a dozer? And he immediately jumps up, sits down, starts trying to shake the, give me high five in the air. Dozers are gluten-free. They're made in the USA in upstate New York, and that is important. If you're concerned about the food and pet recalls from China and other nations that have harmed pets with poisonous stuff, you know, you want to be very careful about feeding your pet treats that are made in other countries. So these are made in the USA. They're gluten-free. They're low in fat. They have no artificial colors. They have no artificial flavors. They have no artificial preservatives. They're all natural. They clean the teeth. They reduce plaque. They freshen your dog's breath, and your dog will absolutely love them. They're available. Again, you can find them on Amazon, or I built in a direct link. If you just go to roadtrekking.com/dozers, roadtrekking.com/dozers.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's roadtrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
One of the biggest fears that many RVers have is fire. Fire destroys many, many RVs every year, and often at a very tragic cost of life. Now, if you have never seen an RV fire, you may not realize how quickly an RV can burn down to the metal frame. And having propane on board makes the prospect even worse, as it will likely mean there's an explosion. So when I tried to research how big of a problem this is, it's very hard to nail down exact statistics, except to say that RV fires are much more common than they certainly should be. The number of RV fires reported each year, depending on who you rely on as a source, range from a low of around 1,000 or so to as many as 10,000. So nailing it down with any accuracy, it takes a lot more than just a quick check on the internet. But it's become such a problem. Our friend Greg Gerber over at RV Daily News, Greg has started tracking just news accounts of RV fires. He started that last summer, and since then, his list has grown to like over 150. And those are just the ones that received news coverage. Fact is, most of them don't. Most don't make the news, but those are the ones he's seen. Well, so the idea of fireproofing or keeping our RVs safe from fire is really an important topic for all RVers. So to help us understand what we can do, what we need to do, how big, where the problems could occur, and to give us that confidence that we've done all we can to make our RV as fireproof as possible, we have brought on our good friend Mark Polk. And Mark has been on the program a year or so ago, but with his wife Dawn, Mark produces professional RV how-to instructions at RVEducation101.com. He does videos and DVDs, writes books and ebooks on using and maintaining your RV. Mark is a true expert on all aspects of RVs and RV safety, and I am delighted to have Mark on the program this week to talk to us about fire safety. Well, Mark Polk joins us right now. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good, Mike, and thanks for having me.
Well, if there is anybody who can give us some good advice that we all need to follow both on a regular basis and annual and semi-annual maintenance for our RVs, and then just the stuff that we need to be aware of about fire safety, I thought it would be you. Let's start with, there seems to be a lot of RV fires out there. As I do my news scans around the country, I'm always hearing about them.
Yes, absolutely, Mike. I think what amazes me is you only really see the ones that get reported to the media, and that's the way that, you know, we're aware that there are these fires. But if you dig down into statistics with insurance companies, then you start to see the real picture, and there's a lot more RV-related fires out there than people actually realize.
Well, most people think that they're all set. They got a fire detector, a smoke alarm in their RV, and maybe a CO2 detector. But there's more involved than just that. And maybe you could walk us through some of the things that we all need to do to make sure our RV is protected against fire.
Well, Mike, I would start by saying it's absolutely crucial that you not only are aware of the safety devices that an RV comes equipped with, but that you understand how to use them and that you maintain them. And what I mean by that is the majority of the safety devices like smoke alarms and LP gas leak detectors and carbon monoxide detectors are battery operated. And a lot of people let an RV sit in storage for long periods of time, and then next spring they check the tire pressure and check the oil and check this, and then they hit the road and don't give any thought to the batteries in those devices being low or just being dead. And then when you need that alarm, you know, to be there to help possibly save your life, it's not functioning properly. So getting in a habit of replacing batteries, and you might want to do it like some people might want to do it on January 1st every year, or some people do it when daylight savings, when you change the clocks, you replace your batteries. And then a really good habit to get into is prior to every trip you take in your RV, you test the device. And basically, when you push the button and you hear the audible alarm, all you're doing there is testing the electronics of the device, but at least you know it's in working order and that the batteries are operating properly. So that's number one in a line of defense.
Now while we're at that, some people, a lot of people right now have their RVs in storage, and they're in cold weather, and they should be aware that cold weather, does it not, drains those batteries much faster than they might think. They might have put one in the fall, but if it's really cold, those batteries get stretched to their limits right there.
Yes, that's cold weather affects it. Something I don't think a lot of RVers do know is when it comes to a safety device in your RV, there's a different UL listing. It must be approved for use in RVs, and I'm talking smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, LP gas leak detectors. It has to be able to withstand extreme temperatures. It has to be able to stand vibration. So if you say you go to replace a device and you purchase one that's designed for use in your home, and you put it in your RV, it's not going to work and last as long as the one that is UL listed for use in RV. So it's really important that people look to see that the device is made for use in RVs. And another thing I think is extremely important that a lot of people don't realize, all these devices have expiration dates, and it's typically 5 years from the date it was manufactured. Nobody talks about that, and the really odd thing to me is you can't just look at the front of the device and see an expiration date. You might have to take it off the wall and look at the back, and then it'll say, oh, this thing, you know, expires in 2017. So I think RV owners need to be aware of that, and they need to look to see what that expiration date is. And I even go as far as recommending, you know, just take a Sharpie and write the expiration date on the front of the device. So you, when you glance at it, you're like, oh, this, you know, this thing's going to expire in 6 months.
Where's the best place then if they do have an alarm system that needs replacement? Is it a camping store or is it Amazon, an RV dealer? Where's the easiest place to find the proper detector?
Well, almost all RV dealers and like, you know, Camping World, they know and they understand that these devices have to be designed for use in RVs, so they only stock those. You can go online and do a simple search and just, you know, type in RV smoke alarms designed for use in RVs, and it'll direct you to some sites where you could purchase and know, you know, feel reassured that you're getting the proper one to put in your RV.
While we're talking about devices that have an expiration date, we should also talk, I guess, about the fire extinguishers that are on every RV.
Absolutely, and that gets into a whole nother topic that I think is so important for RV owners to understand. Basically, first of all, the National Fire Protection Association, RVIA, adopted them for fire and life safety requirements for RVs. And one of those requirements is that the vehicle has a fire extinguisher. Typically, it's a very small portable, like a 5-pound fire extinguisher. And those types of fire extinguishers are not designed to put out a large fire or a fire that's getting out of control. It's pretty much there. If a fire starts and you're right there at the time it starts, you can probably deal with that fire. But it's certainly not designed for a large fire, and it's not worth risking your life over. So in that event, you would just get out of the RV and call professionals to come deal with it. But getting back to your question, basically, every time you use the RV, you want to physically inspect the fire extinguisher. You want to look into the sight gauge and make sure that it's fully charged. The indicator states that it's fully charged, and if it's not, then you would want to replace it, or if you have a type that can be refilled, you'd want to get it refilled. The other thing is, if it's a dry chemical extinguisher, the powder settles in the bottom of the extinguisher and kind of gets like caked in there, and what you want to do is take it out of the holder, turn it upside down, and give it a couple good whacks on the bottom to loosen that powder up. So if you do have to use it, it's going to operate.
Right, good advice. I didn't know that, and that's the first thing I'm going to do next time I go in my RV. So we've talked about the detection and the protection, but where do most RV fires originate? And what can we do to minimize the risk and keep our RV as fire safe as possible?
Based on what research I've done in the past on what the most common RV fires are, it's the back of the refrigerator. It's like combustible fluid fuel that might be dripping on a hot surface like an exhaust system. So like, say, transmission fluid drips on the exhaust system and that ignites the fire. It's electrical shorts. Let's say you're using a electric heater inside the RV to kind of supplement the furnace, and that heater has a really high wattage, So you leave it on for extended periods of time, like all night while you're sleeping, and it's creating a lot of heat in the electrical circuit to the point where the insulation might start to melt, and then two wires make contact that ignites the fire. So there's several different areas that you need to be concerned with. I mentioned the refrigerator, and basically an RV refrigerator requires some type of heat source to operate. So it's either going to be an open LP gas flame or it's going to be an electric heat element. But either way, it creates a lot of heat, and if there's anything in that area in the back that could ignite from that heat, that's where the fire starts.
We'd be talking like dust, perhaps, or leaves that blow in when you open the door, that kind of stuff?
Yes, or because you got to think about RVs, you're driving down the road, and this thing is dealing with all this vibration, excessive vibration, over and over and over again. So, you know, a gas line, a small propane leak starts to, and this is outside, you know, this is behind the refrigerator, and then you turn the refrigerator on, and when it ignites, it's got that gas leak, and now not only is a potential fire, but it's a potential explosion. So what I like to, and I don't want to sound excessive, and I don't want to make people paranoid, but...
Yeah, I'm getting afraid to get in my RV next time, Mark. I'm getting scared.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen because, you know, we buy RVs to have fun and enjoy it. But as long as people are thinking safety, that's then you're headed down the right path. I like to recommend that I want to say annually, and I don't know, you know, I think it's a good idea because you do drive it. I guess it depends how much you use the RV, but take it into an RV dealership and ask them to check the LP gas system. And what they'll do is they'll check it for leaks. They'll do a pressure test. They'll make sure that it's adjusted properly, the right amount of pressure to operate the appliances in the RV. Pretty simple test. It doesn't take long. It's not real expensive. And then you have peace of mind that your LP gas system is ready for another camping season. I think being aware of what type of appliances you're operating in the RV, like I said, an electric heater, it not only can, if it's a high wattage heater, it can heat up the electrical circuits, but also some of them heaters, if you don't make sure you get the right type, that the heater itself can start a fire.
What kind of heaters are we talking about? And are they like those little ceramic heaters, or and how much is high wattage?
Well, I recommend like the ceramic type, and there are little heaters that Bill tips over, gets bumped, it'll shut off automatically. You know, the dog bumps up against it, knocks it over, you're not aware of it. You just want to check into some of those things before you purchase it. Of course, you don't want anything that operates off of any kind of fuel that's inside, like kerosene or anything like that, because then you're dealing with carbon monoxide poisoning, and that's a whole other topic. But basically, I would say 750 to 1,000 watts would be way safer than a 1500 watt appliance, because at 1500 watts you're starting to max out the capability of a 15 amp circuit. Without getting things too complicated, I would say try to limit it to 1000 watts, and I wouldn't run it all night while you're sleeping. I'd run it, get the help supplement the furnace, get the RV warm, and then when you go to bed at night, you know, use the blankets and stuff to stay warm, and don't depend on a supplemental source of heat.
That is such good advice, and that's another one. I just looked up mine. I use a little ceramic, and it is a 1500 watt. Does a great job, but boy, I you might have saved us the next time, because I've left it on all night, and I have not noticed. We've got a huge inverter and a big system, and we were plugged into shore power, but nevertheless, that's I'm glad to know that. So 750 to 1,000, look for that.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to make people paranoid, but it's just being aware of these things, that when you run a heater like that on a continuous basis, it creates a lot of heat in the circuit, and you know, there are codes that are adopted by RVIA when they build RVs for fire and life safety, for electrical, and they ensure that the RV has the proper size wiring and has the proper circuits to handle the loads that are specified by that breaker. But there's, in my opinion, why push the limit? Why push the max limit of what the capabilities are? You know,
what one other possible source of a fire, I suppose, is the in the galley or the kitchen of an RV where we cook, either with LP gas or with now many of them are with electric. But what precautions or what things do we need to be aware of there about fire danger?
Well, one of the big things is, you know, if the RV has curtains around the kitchen window or anything paper towel, you know, a lot of people have a paper towels hanging directly above the range and or the cabinet just off from the range. Anything that can ignite from an open flame can start a fire and can get out of control extremely fast. One of the biggest things, and not just in an RV, but in your house, is a common grease fire. So, you know, you put the grease in the pan, and then you get distracted, and you're not paying attention, and before you know it, that grease ignites. And then the big issue there is a lot of people aren't aware that there are different types of fires and different types of fire extinguishers that are required to extinguish the fire. And they use the wrong thing, and then that actually spreads a fire. Like in the example of a grease fire, if you put water on it, the grease is going to get on top of the water, and the water is going to spread the fire, and then everything in the kit, before you know it, within a matter of seconds, the kitchen's engulfed in flames.
Well, Mark, you have been, I think I lose this term literally, probably a lifesaver for some of our listeners out there. You have told all of us things that we didn't realize or were unaware of. And I want to, again, I will put links on the show notes for this episode to your incredible website, RVEducation101.com. Mark and his wife, Dawn, have produced probably the best series of training, RV training, that anybody can find anywhere. DVDs and videos and books and ebooks. I'll put a link there, Mark. And I thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom today with our audience. And I want to remind people that you and Dawn appear at a number of RV shows all around the country on a regular basis, and look for them often. Anything coming up in the next couple of weeks that we ought to, that where people can find you?
Well, no, we're actually working with Rolling on TV right now, and we're going to do some television episodes that will be aired on a lot of television stations around the country. So we're putting a lot of effort into that, and then we've got some projects we're working on. So we're not doing the seminar circuit right now, but we're trying to continue to get out there in as many different platforms as we can to help educate RV owners.
Well, people can look again at your website and they can find everything. And then when they do see your name at a RV rally or a gathering, to make sure they attend your seminar. Mark Polk, thank you so much for all of your expertise and being with us today.
Hey, Mike, can I have one more minute here?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to say something that I am a real advocate for is carbon monoxide safety, and I just want people to know that carbon monoxide is what's called a silent killer. You can't smell it, you don't see it, you can't taste it, and it's so important that older RVs prior to, I'm not sure the date, I think maybe 2005, somewhere in there, didn't come equipped with carbon monoxide detectors, and I think it is absolutely essential that you have an operating carbon monoxide detector in your RV. Make sure you know it's operating properly. And I think it's important that you learn what the symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning are. And if you start to experience any of those symptoms, you know what to do to save a life. So I just want to throw that in there before we... Before we call today.
Well, maybe we'll get you back and we'll do a whole interview section on carbon monoxide and what we need to know to keep our units safe again with that. But Great advice. I did not know that either. Pre 2005, you'd think that they didn't have them. So go get
yeah,
one.
I think so. And see, a lot of people that own a travel trailer don't think that there's a need because they don't have a generator or whatever. But a lot of deaths from carbon monoxide dealing with RVs is somebody parked next to you and they run their generator and it comes in through a roof vent or a window and then you never wake up. Mm. And that's the reality of it. So huge topic, really important.
Well, thank you for making us aware of that too. Mark, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again.
All right, Mike.
Hey, I got an email follow-up from Mark, by the way, and he said, hey, Mike, I wanted to clarify a statement I made on the interview so people are not confused or misinformed. It was not my intent to say that a fire can start if you use a portable heater that is 1,500 watts. That's what we have when we take an extra supplemental heater along with us, a little ceramic heater. It's 1,500 watts. Mark notes that a typical 15-amp breaker, which is what most of those plug into, a 15-amp breaker is capable of handling up to 1,800 watts, and if there was a problem, the breaker is the safety mechanism and would trip. But Mark notes, I was attempting to explain, if you push the upper limit of an electrical circuit, it does create heat, and heat is what ultimately results in fire. I always err on the side of safety and don't want your listeners to be confused or overly concerned. So thanks, Mark, for sending that along. Hey, the interview of the week is brought to you by our friends at SunshineStateRVs.com, where every new or used Road Trek motorhome they sell is delivered to the customer free anywhere in America. At Sunshine State RVs, we've been down there, and I don't know how to describe it, except it's the largest selection of Class B RVs that I think you'll find anywhere in the country. If you're looking for a Class B RV, particularly a used one, you need to make a trip down to sunny Florida. Gainesville, Florida is where they're located, but you can also search them on the internet at sunshinestatervs.com. They have used Class B RVs ranging from early 1990s to their current year and everything in between. And Sunshine State RVs is now a brand new dealer for Road Trek, for brand new Road Treks. They sell new current year Road Treks as well. They carry also in the used inventory, they have used Road Treks, used Pleasureways, Winnebagos, Leisure Travels, and many, many more. You simply are not going to find a wider selection of used Class B RVs anywhere else. Every RV they sell has been through a very thorough 172-point inspection. They ensure that all the mechanical and manual systems are in top condition. Every RV is road tested. It's tested out on the road to make sure it runs and drives the way it should. They go over the interior as entirely as they do the outside. Every component turned on and tested to make sure it's doing what it should do. All used RVs thoroughly cleaned and detailed. We saw their operation, got a chance to meet Nick and his crew there at SunshineStateRVs.com and came away very impressed. Check them out online or in person in Gainesville, Florida is where they're located, or start off with their website, SunshineStateRVs.com.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle. Here's the road trekking news of the week.
All right, we got three stories for you. The first one from Florida, from Marathon, Florida, which is located in Monroe County. And the sheriff's department down there is investigating after a Marathon, Florida woman was scammed out of $8,500 while she was trying to purchase an RV online from a private seller. A 67-year-old victim tried to purchase the RV on a fake website, it turned out, that she believed was actually part of eBay. And it's a big scam that happens, say sheriff deputies, all the time. The victim told deputies she contacted a woman who had listed an RV for sale on the eBay Motors website. That's a legitimate website. And they agreed to a $10,000 transaction. But then the sheriff's office says the victim said the thief told her to use the eBay Vehicle Purchase Protection Program as a protection against fraud and directed her to a separate website that the seller claimed was an eBay website, and it had a buy it now option. Well, that's the fake website. It was a fake website. The woman went and followed the instructions that were set up there and was told to make payments using eBay gift cards. Now, she was given an email address to which to send the gift card information to complete the transaction. They said once all the payments were made, it would be shipped to her. And if anything went wrong, eBay would refund the money under their protection program. But that was on a fake website. Turns out the victims purchased $10,000 in eBay gift cards. She never got her RV. She contacted eBay customer support, who gave her the news that she'd been scammed. Canceled some of the gift cards, but still was out $8,500. These guys got those cards immediately, cashed them in. Sheriff's Department warns the public from this, that this happens a lot. They say many frauds like that ask users to make purchase using gift cards. If you ever get somebody saying that, it's a red flag. It is a scam, they say. Authorities said customers never go with a seller who wants them to use a gift card or a Green Dot card or a money order or a MoneyGram. Don't. Those are usually the marks of a scam. And you will not get your money back if you're so scammed. So sorry for that woman, but a lesson for us all. Second story is pretty interesting. For those of you who are looking for ammunition to convince your spouse or your partner, whoever you need to convince that you need an RV to just kind of unwind, there's a new study out that suggests that just a couple of days of camping in the great outdoors can reset your biological clock and help you get more sleep. There's a couple of studies, actually. There was one done some years ago, and it was done after a two-week camping trip in Colorado, and it found that everybody slowed down, slept better, their melatonin levels were all fixed up right and adjusted right. But they wanted to test that again, and so they did another study just recently. And that first study was done in 2013, and it showed by the end of 2 weeks that the camper's body started to release melatonin around sunset and stopped releasing it around sunrise. They got an average of 2 hours earlier, better sleep. Their clocks were reset. But you don't have to do as long as that. New study shows that in just 2 days, campers' internal clocks shift so that your melatonin levels start to rise about an hour earlier than in the days before you left on your trip. Bottom line is you're going to sleep better and unwind more. There you go, evidence. And we got a link to all this. Just look under the news of the week, under the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/126. One final story, a pet peeve from so many drivers are RVers. I'm sorry, it is RVers more often than not. Not always, but often, who get in that left lane and sit there at 70 miles an hour or maybe even a couple miles above or a couple miles below. Well, look, let's be honest. The most people traveling in that left lane are going 80 miles or more. And that's just the way it is. Well, in many states now, police are starting to crack down on those left lane campers, they call them. And in Washington state, they are increasing the base penalty for those left lane campers on our state highways up to $70 for a violation. They point out in Washington state, it is a traffic infraction to drive continuously in the left lane of a multi-lane roadway when it impedes the flow of other traffic.
Yeah, but they're speeding behind me. I'm going the speed limit. They can just take their time.
That's what so many old curmudgeon farts say when they drive. Well, I hope they pull them over. It's happening across the country. Washington's cracking down. They stopped 13,000 left lane violators last year. And they're going to do more. So they're out there to grab all those people. People who sit in the left lane and just don't move, you're forcing people to pass on the right, and then that person speeds up, and it just gets to be really ugly. So don't sit in the left. Don't be a left lane camper. You know, if you're not going to go the speed limit, don't stay in that left lane other than to go around somebody slower than you. Then get back in one of the inside lanes, and it will be much better. All right, the portion of the podcast of the RV News of the Week, that's always brought to you by Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. The Alda Hydronic System brings so many features and benefits that you cannot find with any other RV heating system. The Alda system, now available on many different manufacturing platforms for RVs, the Alda system is a hydronic system. It is silent. It is a radiant heat. It gives you a warm, even, naturally heated interior. It is perfect for pets. It's perfect for humans. It's so efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC, and that will thus extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. But even better, because this is silent, radiant, hydronic heat, you don't have that irritating noise of the blower always on with that forced air heat. You don't have the dryness that forced air comes. It is so comfortable, and you can get many different options. The one that Jennifer and I have on our Road Trek CS Adventurous XL is we have floor heat, heated floors, such a luxury. Anyway, it's available now on many different RV models. When you're shopping for a new RV, you tell the dealer that you want Alda, A-L-D-E. It is the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
All right, Valentine's Day. It's almost here. Time to check in for some traveling tech type gifts for our friends. With our buddy Steve Van Dinter from Verizon Wireless. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mike. With less than a week to go until Valentine's Day, the pressure is on. And if you're looking to make the day extra special, from music to lighting and more, we've got you covered. First off, when it comes to a gift, red is always the right color. From a deep red designer Rebecca Minkoff leather slide case for the latest iPhone to the wireless Powerbeats headphones, you can make a tech bouquet filled with these romantically colored treats. On the music side, there's the JBL Flip 3 speaker, the Ultimate Ears Megaboom, and Bose SoundLink 2, all giving you great Bluetooth options with amazing sound, and a bonus, they also come in red. When it comes to speakers you can slip into your purse for a night out, there's also the Altec Lansing Mini H2O. When you're looking to set the mood, you don't want harsh white lights. Instead, opt for the Hue Light Strip Plus. These discreet LED strips can be tucked into many places, under counters, behind stereos, along the edge of the walls, and they glow in 3 million shades of beautiful color that you control with an app. Plus, you can pair them with apps like Hue Disco and have the lights sync to music, or try an app called Hue Manic and let your lights pulse with the glow of candlelight. Finally, of course, there are some great Valentine's Day apps, and here is one from our friends at Digital Trends. It's called Between, and it lets you share text, voice messages, and calendars with your loved one, and creates an archive of your relationship. Guys, it also lets you know how long you've known your partner, so you'll never miss that special occasion again. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
And Verizon is a sponsor of the Traveling Technology Tip. It operates America's most reliable wireless network, more than 112 million retail connections. Hey, when Verizon says better matters, they mean it. It's the only system that we use, the only network I use. I mean, I've tried all the other ones, and I'm telling you, Verizon is reliable. It is the most reliable. I can almost always get through very, very few places in the country. And even in the most remote areas, I most always have a Verizon signal. That's why I use Verizon exclusively when we do our road trekking. Verizon is ranked the highest. It's not just us. Highest ranking in three leading network studies in multiple tests year after year. They rank number one in network quality performance. They rank number one in network performance satisfaction. And they rank number one in overall network performance. In the nation's largest independent study, they were ranked number one in overall network performance throughout the United States by Root Metrics. Can your network say that? If you're stuck on the wrong network, head over to Verizon and get unstuck. Verizon is the official wireless provider for the road trekking travels.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, time now for another Off the Beaten Path report from our regular Off the Beaten Path correspondents. You know them, Tom and Patty Burkett. Hi, guys. You ready for one? We're ready.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike. Your listeners have undoubtedly seen at least a few of the biggest things our back roads have to offer. Maybe it's the popcorn ball in Sac City, Iowa, or the lobster in Isla Mirada, Florida, or the 4,000-pound Paul Bunyan in Bangor, Maine. You might not have noticed that our national byways also offer a wide array of smallest things. Some of these are scale models. The venerable Roadside America model near Chartersville, Pennsylvania, has been amazing travelers for nearly a century. Cross Island Chapel in Oneida, New York, is a church that will seat exactly two worshipers, and Mill End Park in Portland, Oregon, has one tree and 4 square feet of flowers and grass.
One of our favorite small things is Tiny Town, which sits a bit west of Denver on US 285 in the town of Morrison, Colorado. George Turner began building this attraction in 1915 for the enjoyment of his daughter. 10 years later, the town had grown to more than 125 buildings and saw more than 20,000 visitors a year. For a few years, it rivaled Pikes Peak as Colorado's number one tourist attraction. Then Tiny Town fell on hard times. A series of floods, a fire, the rerouting of US 285, and several changes of ownership left it basically in ruins in 1983.
Then a real estate group adopted Tiny Town. In a fundraiser for the Denver Children's Museum, they leased lots in the town to anyone who was willing to build a house to the original specifications, following a strict building code. The lots sold out almost immediately. Businesses clamored for the chance to be included, so the town added a business district. Local Colorado shops, no chain stores allowed, built replica models of their own stores to populate the new real estate. Two ride-on model trains were added to the grounds.
Since then, Tiny Town has grown. The hillside above it sports a mining camp and a mine operation. There are Native American settlements and encampments. Lakes and forests surround the settlements, and the town has parks and civic features. New neighborhoods have been added, as have businesses. Each new addition conforms to a specific time period, and only unique or historical commercial structures are allowed. Recently, several of Turner's original buildings were discovered in a barn nearby. They've been restored and added to the town as the neighborhood of Turnerville.
Visit Tiny Town. Climb on board behind the genuine scale model steam locomotive. It burns as much as 140 pounds of coal every day and boils off more than 100 gallons of water. Ride the train in and out among the neighborhoods and environs. You'll even get to see some things that can't be seen by visitors on foot. Walk around and take a close look at the intricate and historically accurate models. Sit under the trees and enjoy a picnic. Not too far west on 285, you can turn off to the Buffalo Creek camping area in the Pike National Forest for dispersed sites and a campground.
Big or small, you'll find it all if you get off the interstate and keep your eyes open. You might even see us, Tom and Patty Burkett, somewhere out there, off the beaten path.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
All right, we've got 9 big RV shows around North America for you this weekend. Let's start in Jacksonville, Florida, the Jacksonville RV Show at the Jacksonville Equestrian Center there. Up in Minnesota, the great state of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul's big RV vacation and camping show, February 9th through the 12th at the Minneapolis Convention Center in Minneapolis. Salem, Oregon, the Salem Spring RV Show, February 9th through the 12th at the Oregon State Fairgrounds in Salem. In Seattle, it's the big Seattle RV Show at the CenturyLink Field Event Center in Seattle, February 9th through the 12th. Also February 9th through the 12th in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, the Ottawa RV Expo and Sale, February 9th through the 12th at the EY Center in Ottawa. Down in Texas, San Antonio Boat and Travel Trailer Show, February 9th through the 12th at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. Out in Montana, the big Montana RV Boat and Power Sports Show, February 10th through the 12th at the Four Seasons Arena in Great Falls, Montana. And down in Ohio this weekend, the Columbus RV Show. That one is February 10th through the 12th. It's at the Greater Columbus Convention Center in Columbus. And rounding out this weekend's RV shows, February 10th through the 12th in Richmond, Virginia, the Richmond Camping RV Expo at the Richmond International Raceway Complex. Go to the Road Trekking blog, roadtrekking.com/126, and you can scroll down in the RV calendar and find links to all of these attractions and these big RV shows this weekend.
North America in a Class B motor home. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking.
Road Trekking. Hey, that's another edition of the Road Trekking RV Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This is one of the longer ones we've done in a long time, but there's just so much happening out there. We love sharing it with you. Hey, remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard or be a part of the podcast, just use that voicemail message. Click the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com blog and subscribe to the podcast, too. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher, and then every Wednesday when a new episode is out, you'll get it listed right there on your podcast app. New episodes released, as I said, every Wednesday. We invite you also to join our free mailing list. We send out a very special newsletter to insiders every Monday morning. You can sign up for that right from the roadtrekking.com blog. We'd love to have you be a part of that as well. Till next time, on behalf of my wife, Jennifer, and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland, Road Trekking across North America. So long, everybody.